We're live and we're local. It's a Juno afternoon on Wednesday, March 14th, 2018. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Happy Pi Day. On today's show, we'll hear about Perseverance Theater's new production, Serrano de Bergerac. We'll learn about spring break classes and the Empty Bowls event at Canvas. Gabrielle Vance and friends will be here to highlight the Bright Girls Summer Academy, and we'll get our weekly Eagle Crest update with Jeff Reclow. Those interviews, national native news, bird note, music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Looking at weather, scattered rain showers for the rest of today, highs in the mid-40s. Tonight, mostly cloudy with isolated rain showers and lows in the mid-30s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs around 40. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Denise Pictou Maloney discussed the murder of her mother, Anna Mae Aquash, during a national investigation of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in Canada, and called on communities, organizations, and governments to listen to victims' families. Her mother was involved with the American Indian Movement in the 1970s, disappeared, and was later found dead on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. It took more than two decades before some members of AIM were charged with her death. Pictou Maloney says her family long sought answers, and adds they've seen little to no support, which needs to change.
We need healthier resources in our communities, access to health. Generations of trauma have created a lifestyle in our communities that we accept as acceptable because we think that's what's normal, being born Indigenous, that you have to exist in such a high level of violence, and that our women deserve to have a safe place to run so they don't leave our communities.
The government of Canada is conducting the national investigation, which includes public hearings across the country. Oglala Lakota County Commissioners have taken action to protect sacred areas within their jurisdiction, specifically the Wounded Knee Massacre site on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Jim Kent has more.
The Oglala Lakota County Commissioners have created a planning and zoning board, which will be empowered to decide on zoning regulations throughout the county. They're also staffing an Historic Preservation Commission, which will be empowered to protect areas of historical importance and/or sensitivity throughout the county. Wendell Yellow Bull is chairman of the Oglala Lakota County Commissioners. He noted that the Planning and Zoning Board and the Historic Preservation Commission will assist in developing economic growth throughout the county, as well as in protecting historic properties from development by non-natives or associated parties.
Normally, the federal government creates statutes and laws. As far as the tribe, it takes those mandates and tries to fund them as much as they can, but they're also limited in the activities of enforcing some of the archaeological finds. The county will deal with non-natives on that issue. So we're kind of going around full circle. We're going to help each other protect a lot of these sacred sites.
The Oglala Lakota County Planning and Zoning Board and the Historic Preservation Commission were created as the result of concern over South Dakota newspaper publisher Tim Gallego's plans to purchase 40 acres of land near the Wounded Knee Massacre site. Gallego intended to build a museum, a facility to sell Lakota arts and crafts, a trading post, and a campground near land considered sacred by the Lakota. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The FBI is recognizing a Coeur d'Alene tribal member for efforts to prevent domestic violence in Idaho. Emily Schwing reports.
Bernie Lassart started as the program manager for the Coeur d'Alene tribe's domestic violence and sexual assault program in 2005. There were only four files on her desk back then. Since then, Lassart's found enough funding to grow the program to reach hundreds of people who need help.
I don't think people understand that the impact of domestic violence and or sexual assault is really that great. Indian women are beaten 3.5 times more than any other race. You know, 1 in 3 women will be raped, and on some reservations, that's 100%.
The FBI has named Lassart one of 56 recipients from across the country who will formally accept a National Community Leadership Award in Washington, D.C. next month. Lassart's also the only Native American recipient. I'm Emily Schwing reporting.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Kewaunee Broadcast Corporation announces the Alaska Native Art Auction, April 4th in Anchorage, Alaska. See amazing artwork from across the Alaska Native community. Reserve a table or donate art at knba.org. Proceeds benefit Native news programming.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
And that's just a little bit of music from the score of a theater production of Cyrano de Bergerac. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. Sorry about the technical difficulties in the beginning there. You probably missed my billboard, so I will just tell you now. Here with me in the studio are Enrique Bravo and Joseph Biagini from Perseverance Theater, and they're here to tell us about the new play opening tomorrow, the classic Cyrano de Bergerac. Welcome to a Juno Afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Hey. Billed as the best romantic play ever written. Love is in the air, spring is when panache turns to love, yes.
Yeah.
So this is a new translation, an adaptation of the play, and the premiere at Perseverance is the world premiere of that. What's the history of this production?
Well, it was written in the 1800s by Edmund Rostand. It's set in mid-17th century France. But one really cool thing about this being a new translation and adaptation is that we have been able to work with the playwright, the guy who's been adapting it, David Grimm. So looking at lines and changing lines because we think they fit our story a little better. And that's not always a chance you get with classical text. And it's been really useful, I think.
Yeah, the director, Eleanor Holdridge, she has a relationship with David that goes back about 30 years. So to have that sort of relationship intact has been really useful for us as a production to kind of – you can actually ask the guy who wrote the stuff. So that's been really great. Yeah, and we've even altered some lines to sort of make the story clearer. And, yeah, it's been a really great process.
And what are each of your roles in the production? Enrique, let's start with you.
I'm Christian. I'm the young – everyone says the young, dumb guy. But I don't think he's dumb. I think he's just – he's his world is military, so that's where he feels the most comfortable. And like a lot of people do when they encounter a very attractive girl, he just goes sort of dumb then. And he doesn't know how to sort of talk to women because he's just so sort of bowled over by her beauty. And that's where Cyrano comes in. Basically, they work as a tag team to sort of woo her. So I use my looks and I basically steal his words. Mm. And that sort of unfolds throughout the play. But it's really around, Cyrano. But that's my role, Christian. So I'm the young, shy one. I'll say.
verbally challenged in the presence of beautiful women. And Joseph, what about you?
I'm the assistant director. So I work with Eleanor Holdridge, the director, to kind of mind meld with her and make sure that her vision is established across the stage. And with a large show like this, there are 16 actors. It's particularly useful in the ensemble scenes where she might be talking to the principals and I can go talk to the ensemble and tell them what she was telling me, whispering to me a minute ago.
And what's it like working with her? Do you guys work together well?
It's been a real treat. Yeah, I think we work together pretty well. And like I said, it's a mind meld almost. So at a certain point,
like
we're just
phrase.
Thinking the same thing. And
I was super excited because I actually the first show that I came and did at Perseverance Hair, which was in 2006, The Crucible actually was going on at the same time. So that's a show that I got to watch while I was in rehearsals the very first time I came up to Juno. And I was like, this is amazing. This is a great show. And it's a show that she directed. So she did that Much Ado, but that was about 10 years ago. And this is the first time back since that. And I had heard, you know, through multiple people that had worked with her, nothing but good things. So to kind of actually now be in that process, I mean, it was all true. She's been great to work with in a lot of ways. Especially because you get a mixed bag when you know, there's people that have been doing this forever and this is their job, and there's people on the stage that you'll see that this is their first show ever. So to kind of cover that and be able to work between those kind of performers is really a challenge sometimes, and she handles it really well.
That's great. And what's it like working with the other actors? We've got John Keebler in the role of Cyrano and Katie Tickell, Roxanne?
Yeah, they're great. And there's also J. Todd Adams. He plays the Geesh. Those are all the sort of out-of-town actors, the principals. They've been great. They're really sort of – they bring a lot to the table. John's got so much text, and he handles it really well. They've all been really – I mean, that's what's great about, you know, the shows that we do here at Perseverance is that there's that mix of people, these people that come in and work on and sort of can bring their gifts and share them with the community here. And the same happens to them. They learn about this really great little gem that exists in Southeast Alaska.
Yeah, I doubled down on John having so much to do, but he has so much fun with it. And it's a much more physical Cyrano than you'll typically see in other productions. Right. It's a much more fun Cyrano, we think. He's charming.
And yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of elements in this show. Like we haven't even touched on the sword fighting. They brought in a adjunct that works at Yale, Rick Sordelet, who handled the sword fighting in this show, and he did a great job. I mean, there's some serious stuff that's happening. I feel kind of scared for the front row. they're gonna get in close.
Whole new meaning to the splash zone.
Yeah, exactly. So, but there's some great fights that happen in the show, and that's because of these people that they brought in. Yeah.
Cool. And what's the story about, without giving too much away?
Cyrano is in love with Roxanne, the most beautiful woman in his eyes. She's intelligent and charming. But Cyrano is – this Cyrano in particular, he's perfect in every way except for his nose. He has a monstrous proboscis. And it – really messes with his self-image and his confidence in pursuing Roxanne. Roxanne, meanwhile, loves Christian. And she gets Cyrano to help her win Christian over. But Christian, like we were saying earlier, is maybe quoted as the dumb, but really just doesn't have a way with words. And because that's so important to Roxanne, Cyrano helps her with that. And so without giving too much away.
Right. Yeah. Well, you see sort of two separate love stories happening, you know, the one between Christian and Roxanne and Roxanne and – or Cyrano and Roxanne. So there's – yeah. And then – There's fighting. There's a war that goes on in the middle
of
it.
Yeah, I definitely – yeah, I was going to ask about the fight scenes, but now I want to just know, like, what's the set look like and the costumes? Who designed them?
Yeah, the costumes are really amazing. Like, I got to, you know, kind of give her props because there's a lot of costumes in this show, and she knocked it out of the park. They're ridiculously beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she brought a lot of stuff with her. I remember when she just got here, there was like 16 boxes that showed up of just, you know, stuff. And it's the costumes are amazing. I mean, they're all very, very much from the time period. And the sound design is also really great. That's Rory Stitt, local boy, coming back. He did it, and he designed it all himself, like did not steal. It's all his original sound design, and it's really great.
And let's see. I've got to skip ahead now. Well, the show opens tomorrow. When and where is it?
And actually,
can find more information?
Opens Friday. Tomorrow is the first sort of preview pay-as-you-can. Friday is the actual opening, and it goes till April 14th. So it's a pretty long run. But
that is a nice long run.
Yeah,
it's almost a month.
It's good. We got some Sunday matinees at 4. You know, regular go times are at 7:30. Yeah.
There's two pay-as-you-can performances.
I think there's three total.
Oh, three total?
Yeah, this Thursday, next Thursday, and then Sunday.
Yeah, that's right. So that's March 15th, 18th, and 22nd.
Mm-hmm. Right on. And where's the best place to find out more information or to get tickets?
You can get tickets or find out more at our website, ptalaska.org. Or you can get tickets by calling our number 364-2421 or by calling the Jack or Hearthside Books.
Excellent. Is there anything else either of you would like to add about the production?
No, I'm really excited. I really do think there's a lot of work that's gone into this, and I think people are going to be very happy because it's just rare that you see shows this big sort of happen on that stage, and there's just a lot of really good things that are coming together. Yeah. Come out and see us. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm excited for the costumes and the humor and, of course, the sword fighting. Well, thank you both for joining me. Feel free to send more representatives of Perseverance Theater if they want to come on the show and talk it up next week. We love having you guys.
Oh, thanks. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You rock some red light. Join us for a public viewing of the documentary Inside Out, Leaving Prison Behind. The film follows three individuals as they're released from prison and struggle to rebuild their lives on the outside. Following the 30-minute screening, we'll have a panel discussion with experts in the field of recovery, incarceration, and reentry. Admission is free at 360 in the KTOO building on Wednesday, March 14th at 5:30 p.m.
You're tuned in to A Juno Afternoon. It's about 20 minutes after the hour. I'm your Wednesday host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is Alex Botello, here representing the Canvas. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Just to start off, what's your role at the Canvas, Alex?
Yeah, I'm the ceramic studio manager. So the Canvas is a community art center, and we do drawing and painting, but my domain is strictly playing with mud in the back room and teaching wheel throwing classes and just kind of keeping that space organized.
What a great job.
Yeah.
And do you make art yourself?
I do. I'm primarily a potter, so I'm making functional wares, cups and bowls and anything you can throw on the wheel and, you know, making my mark and impression on that.
Excellent. So what you touched on what the Canvas does a little bit, but what's the mission for those who don't know?
Yeah, so the Canvas is a part of REACH, but our mission is to integrate individuals with developmental disabilities into the community and through a space that kind of promotes artistic expression and just kind of bringing everyone together in that space. So like I mentioned before, we're kind of doing any kind of drawing, 2D work, doing the 3D sculpture and ceramics. So just any kind of creative outlet.
You've been with the Canvas for a long time?
I've been there for about a year and a half now. So it feels like a long time. And on the same note, it feels like it's gone by really quickly. But I really love the position there. I'm with a good group of people and we serve good folks.
Yeah, you're located downtown on Seward Street. I walk by all the time, and behind those street-level windows are always so fun to peek into when you're walking around or window shopping. You can see people working. You can see the exhibits. It's a nice space.
Yeah.
All right, well, spring break is coming up. That's why you're here. With spring comes some new class offerings. So what's on the agenda at the Canvas?
Yeah, so next week is spring break for the kids in the Juneau area. So we're offering some classes throughout the week. We've got three of them all planned out, but we're going to have two sessions of wheel throwing classes that I'll be teaching, one in the morning. So the morning classes are from 9 to noon. Afternoon classes are from 1 to 4. So I'll be teaching two sessions of that. I also have got one of my coworkers, Dan, is working on this outdoor drawing and painting class. Daniel Todd. I spaced on his last name for a second.
That's okay.
But anyway, yeah, so the goal there, you know, depending on weather, will be to just kind of go out and do some plein air and yeah, just kind of get some outdoor inspiration. That's a lot of the reason why we live in Juneau. So to be able to kind of reflect and draw on that is going to be pretty exciting. The other class that we have offered, and sorry I didn't mention, but that's from 1 to 4 in the afternoon, that class with Dan. In the morning also, Luis Constata is teaching a hand-building ceramics class. They're going to be doing musical instruments. We'll be kind of shaping some whistles, maybe some percussion kind of instruments. The goal hopefully for all these classes is by the end of the week, all of our students will have some kind of finished pieces to sort of reflect from the week and have some new skills and just have a good time.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What's the process for building the musical instruments? Is that something you've ever done before?
I've seen it done. I haven't personally done it, but yeah, I think it's a lot of like pinch pot. So it's the process of kind of having a ball of clay and then using your hands to sort of sculpt it into whatever particular shape you're going for. But then it's just carving out the whistle. And I think it's just really just sort of poking a slightly precise hole into it. And mm-hmm. it gives you the right vibration in the clay that makes it a nice whistle sound.
Does the placement of the holes matter more, or does the shape of the instrument matter?
You know, I think the shape of the vessel really kind of changes the tone of it, but I think the sort of precise cut is what is going to give you that whistle. I've made a bunch of, like, jugs, and those, you know, you can kind of blow in it kind of funny, and you'll get a good tone out of that as well. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I imagine the musical instruments shaping class will involve some, you know, they'll make the shape, then they'll have to fire it. Will they get to glaze it as well?
Yeah. So the way that we do it, just because it's such a short period of time, we end up doing a bunch of underglazing. So we'll let the pieces just sort of dry on Thursday, and by Friday they'll all be sort of hand painting with underglazes. And then over the weekend I'll be firing all that work so that by the following week everything will be finished.
And who are these classes targeted at? Are they for students who are out on spring break?
Yeah, so it's for ages 8 and up. Yeah, everyone is welcome above that age. The painting and drawing class, as far as I know, there isn't really a limit of students. The wheel throwing classes, we are limited in space because of the number of the wheels. So we only have 8 spaces in those classes, and they're going pretty quickly. I know a couple of my classes, I think I've already got 5 students in. So, other than that, it's available to everyone. And you can sign up online. Our online site, you can find us at thecanvasarts.org. Or you can call us. The number is 586-1750.
Cool. Yeah. And so along with those new classes, you also have custom classes and a couple of studios. So let's talk about those. Your ceramic studio is connected to the upcoming Empty Bowls event. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it's a big fundraiser that happens every year. It's a fundraiser for the Glory Hole. And a lot of the different studios around town contribute by donating a lot of the bowls for the event. So the canvas specifically, our sort of target every year is to donate 250 bowls. Along with that, we just kind of have an open studio event. We'll have 2 nights for it. So they're Tuesday, March 27th from 6 to 8 and Sunday, April 8th from 4 to 6. But anyone is welcome to come. The wheels will be available. You can come in. We'll have all the clay and tools ready there for you. And you can come and just help us try to make that target of 250 bowls. And it's a lot of fun. It's a really sort of laid-back event. Everyone comes in, grabs their coffee or whatever that they want to have around, and we'll just listen to music and just try to crank out as many bowls as we can.
Cool. Is there guidance for those who have never thrown a bowl before?
Yeah, a little bit. We have a really good community of potters in there, and we're always kind of willing to help each other out. So if you need a little extra help, I'm sure there's going to be someone there to give you a hand.
Excellent. And then finally, you offer custom classes at the Canvas. So what are those?
So the custom classes are what they sound like. If you have a group of 6 or more, we like to kind of leave it up to you what you might want to try to do, and whether it's offering like a wheel throwing class, a hand building class in ceramics, or you're looking some guidance with either oil painting or acrylic painting, drawing. Again, just call our number or check us out on our website and leave us a little message, and we'll contact you and we'll try to figure out what your goals are and what it would take to make that happen. Whether it's evenings or during the weekend, we're pretty flexible. It's just with enough prompting, we'll make it happen for you.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Alex, for being here today. I'm speaking with Alex Patel from the Canvas, and he was telling me all about spring break class offerings and the ceramic studio and empty bowls. Thanks so much for being here. Is there anything I missed? Anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I guess the last thing that I would mention also is that at the end of the month, so March 31st, we have a pottery sale. It's the first one that we've done in a while, maybe ever. All the open studio members at the Canvas were just trying to promote our work and promote the space. So from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., that's Saturday, March 31st. We'll have all of our work there available for purchase and just for you guys to come and appreciate.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
A lot of my friends just use all ceramic everything for their tableware and their coffee mugs. So yeah. I think I can go and do some early shopping.
Yeah.
Excellent, Alex. Well, thanks so much for being here. Canvas has a great website. All your information is there. And that's how I found out about all of this today. And so you guys can go and check it out as well. And yeah, thanks again. Have a great spring.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Is Bird Note. Why do birds sing? I wonder about this every spring, especially when I hear a black-headed grosbeak scat singing. The question has been around a long time, and many have taken a crack at it. Ancient philosophers, romantic poets, Charles Darwin, even Frankie Lyman and the teenagers. We can narrow the question a bit. What is it about spring that incites birds to sing? Frankie Lyman was on the right track. Modern science still ties spring birdsong to the romantic urge. Longer hours of light in spring stimulate a male bird's hormones, in turn inciting it to sing. And singing attracts females. Here's what some of the lucky female birds get to hear.
Bird Note listeners are taking a once-in-a-lifetime journey to the Galapagos, and you can join us in July 2018. Trip details and more at birdnote.org.
Support comes from the University of Alaska College Savings Plan, helping to reach educational savings goals. Save in Alaska. Study anywhere. Information at uacollegesavings.com.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are all here to talk about the Bright Girls Summer Academy. Got a full house in Studio A today. Would you all please introduce yourselves, and we'll start with you.
I'm Devin.
Hi.
I'm Brecken.
Hi, Brecken.
I'm Gwen.
And you three have all participated in Bright Girls before.
Yes.
So you'll be telling us about your experiences. And yeah.
I'm Gabrielle.
Gabrielle, and what's your role in Bright Girls?
I'm an instructor for the Bright Girls Summer Academies and also an educational designer for the project.
Cool. And what does an educational designer do?
It's really, really fun. I get to come up with curriculum for the summer academies. In addition to the summer academies, we get together throughout the year to do science on Saturdays, so I get to help make that happen. And during the academies, I get to teach and help the girls do your own research and answer your own questions.
Oh, wow. That does sound like a fun job.
It's really fun.
So how did Bright Girls come about? Who are some of your sponsors or partner organizations? Give us a little bit of background or history about the Bright Girls Summer Academy.
Sure. So Bright Girls is a project that's a collaboration between UAF and UAS. And it's a project funded by the National Science Foundation. BRIGHT actually stands for Broadening Research Interests in Geoscience, Habitat, and Technology.
Oh, I didn't know that,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, it is an acronym. Not everybody knows.
Cool.
So it's combining biology and geology, which is really cool.
All right. And you said this is the third year for it here in Juneau.
Yes, this is the third year of the project. We do summer academies in Fairbanks and in Juneau. This is the second year in Juneau, but the third year of the project overall.
And the last year, to hear.
But all the great curriculum we've developed and fun things we do could certainly be applied in the future in different ways as well.
So what sort of subjects are studied in Bright Girls Academy?
Well, we mainly do science use and technology. So we'll, like, take measurements around the field and in the lab, and we'll explore the outdoors with a bunch of friends. And yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I understand there's a lot of field trips and a lot of time outdoors. So since you three have participated before, why don't you tell me a little bit about that? What was your favorite part of the program? And what were some of the field trips you took?
Okay. My favorite part of the program was the trip to Endicott Arm, which was our only overnight trip. But my favorite part of the Endicott Arm trip was getting to test, like, testing the water and counting the seals that we encountered or saw along the way, and just, like, get a good use of our professional equipment overall, which I think is really cool, and it was something that I've never done before, so that was nice.
What kind of equipment were you using, and what were you testing the water for?
Well, my group was testing the water for we were using a CTD, which tests for salinity, temperature, depth, and what else?
Conductivity.
Conductivity of the water. So that's what we were testing for our group. And what we did was we threw 100 meters of rope over the water with the CTD attached, and then we had to reel it back in, which 100 meters of rope doesn't sound like a lot, but by the end of the trip, we all had blisters on our hands.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, well, next year's group should bring some gloves.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. All right. And how about you? What was your favorite part of the program?
Like Devin said, it was the Endicott Arm trip, but mostly was, like, hanging out with the friends and making new friends and meeting new people and just socializing was my favorite part of the trip. So that was really fun.
Cool. And how about you?
I have two favorite parts. My first favorite part was being out and looking at all the glaciers. My second favorite part was, since I'm a freshman, I didn't really have any good friends yet in high school, and I met Brecken, and she is, like, my best friend from this camp. So.
I have to say I've participated in the Becoming an Outdoors Woman program. I don't know if you guys have heard about that. So maybe when you graduate, you guys can become outdoors women too. But, yeah, I did it my first 2 years when I first moved here, and I made all kinds of friends. We're all still friends today, so I'm glad that you guys could have a good bonding experience. Okay, so what would you say to someone who says that Bright Boys should be included? Why is it only for girls?
I think that the reason it's only for girls is because not a lot of girls are involved with geology and biology, and it's funny because my AP biology teacher, she... In her day and age, she was the only woman in the classroom for studying for biology, which was funny. And now in our AP biology class, it's all females and only two boys out of a class of 14.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Anybody else want to touch on that one?
I think it's mainly for girls because it's easier for girls to work together, I think, especially in a field where, like, you're all together. You get to know each other pretty fast and are pretty comfortable around each other. And when you're working with girls and boys, it's all kind of just, you can work together, but some people think of something else, and some people just are all over the place.
I mean, I was
definitely... It can be distracting.
Impressed by everybody's focus and collaboration in the field, and would just want to add that part of the motivation for the project is the underrepresentation of women in science, and specifically in certain disciplines like geology, whereas women are actually much, much better represented in biology. So it's trying to bridge kind of those existing interests and broaden into other interests. But we often find that the kind of practices that we do, you know, you doing your own research, things doing everything hands-on, certainly boys benefit from that as well. Those are just good practices. Everyone benefits from that approach.
Cool. Very cool. Well, I like it. I liked becoming an outdoors woman, too, because, like you said, you can be a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more yourself in a big group of women. And you throw men in the mix, it's okay, you know, but it can be a distraction. All right. When and where does Bright Girls take place?
So this year, it'll be June 18th through the 29th. We're doing it in June, unlike in July last year, because we're hoping to catch more of the pupping season, so see more seals with their pups, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And it's a day academy, so the weekend's off, and it's just during the day, about 9 to 4:30 each day, with some slightly longer field days, as you remember. When we go to Tracy Arm and Endicott Arm, we're getting back a little later. So it is it's not residential. It's for people who live here in Juneau as a day camp. And we start out at the UAF Lena Point Fisheries Facility, which is out by the new NOAA building.
Mm-hmm.
And then we head out to different field sites, Tracy Arm and Endicott Arm, like you all mentioned, but also Point Louisa, Amalga Harbor, different places around town.
Wow, that's great. I wish I could sign up.
We've heard that. I think we need to start doing Bright Adults.
All right. So how can students get registered?
I don't actually know. Visit brightgirlsalaska.org.
Cool.
And there's just a short online application, and it is due by April 1st. So I hope people will take a look soon if they're interested. I know here in Juneau it's spring break next week, so it'll be April before we know it.
That's true.
But it's just a quick form. Check out the website, brightgirlsak.org, just like Brecken said.
Are there a lot of spots, a lot of openings?
It's for 16 students this year. I think our group had 15, right?
Okay.
But for 16 students.
Okay, great. So they can go find out more information on the website, get registered on the website by April 1st, and hope they get in. And it's for students between 9th and 12th grade?
Yeah, so girls who are entering 9th through 12th grade in the fall.
Can they participate if they've already participated?
Unfortunately, no. We love you all so much and would love to have you all back again. But unfortunately, it is a one-time opportunity.
Oh, nothing personal.
No, not at all.
Great. All right. Well, is there anything else that we need to know about this, about Bright Girls, about the program, about registration, anything I forgot to ask?
Oh, I should mention, if I didn't before, that it's free. So since it's funded by NSF, it's completely free, which I hope makes it a great value for the students since it's so much fun and such a good experience.
I was a little bit shocked to find that it was free. I think that's an incredible opportunity. So I hope that there are a lot of folks listening who want to get involved in that. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your experiences about Bright Girls today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You guys have a great spring break.
Take this pink ribbon off my eyes. I'm exposed, and it's no big surprise. Don't you think I know exactly where I stand? This world is forcing me to hold your hand. 'Cause I'm just a girl, a little homie. Well, don't let me
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon, and I'm here with my good friend Jeffrey Clow with our weekly Eagle Crest update. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Thanks for tuning into a Juno Afternoon. All right, Jeffra, what's going on at Eagle Crest?
Well, we are up upon our spring break holiday. So starting tomorrow, Thursday, March 15th, we're open daily through Monday, March 26th for the spring break holiday. So the snow bus starts running on Monday, March 19th. It'll run every day all next week through Sunday, the March 25th. So snow bus will run, and you can find the bus schedule at skijuno.com. And we're open every day and kind of reminding everyone to get up there and ski it or snowboard it while we have it.
So what have past spring breaks been like? Have you gotten a pretty good turnout?
You know, it depends. We had a great spring break last year, and it just all depends upon what the season is. Sometimes people will use it as an opportunity to get out of town and we're quiet. Sometimes people will be in town if the weather's good, the snow is good, and we're busy. So we're anticipating that it's going to be a busy spring break. Probably not the busiest, craziest busy, but we've got still good snow for everyone. And looking at the forecast, it's supposed to be sunny tomorrow and Friday. So we're just going to make the most of it.
Yeah. Are we transitioning into spring snow, spring skiing yet?
It feels like it. The mountain definitely warmed up at the beginning of the week. Monday we started to see temperatures sticking above freezing, really not freezing, and I've watched them this week, and they haven't gotten down below freezing. So that keeps the snow soft, and then it does start to melt. So, that's why we're just reminding everybody we still have snow. It's still great skiing. Porcupine, Hooter, and Ptarmigan will be open from 9 to 4. So we just encourage everybody, get up there and ski it while you can.
Awesome. All right. And speaking of the forecast, I did it at the beginning of the show. We had some technical difficulties, but today we've got scattered rain showers with highs in the mid-40s, and tonight mostly cloudy with isolated rain showers. Thursday, as you mentioned, is going to be mostly sunny with highs around 40. So I had to slip that forecast in. And is there anything else going on at Eagle Crest you want to mention?
I think, Jessica? Just a reminder, Shelley, that sometimes you can look out. You can be down in town and you can look out your window and you can go, oh, it's gray and nasty and maybe it's raining. But I've always found it to be always better on the mountain. And my mantra is, a day out skiing and snowboarding is way better than a day in town. So don't let, what it looks like outside. It's great. The snow and ice is melting down here. But we still have good skiing and snowboarding up on the mountain. And you can find all of the information on Eagle Crest at skijuno.com or your favorite social media platform.
Jeffrey, how many more visits are we expecting from you? How many more weeks are you going to be coming in to do the Eagle Crest?
Well, the season is winding down. We're scheduled to close on April 8th. So next week, because of spring break, we'll probably hopefully do this via telephone. So probably one or two more visits into the studio, but it's been great being here every week and talking about Eagle Crest. It's, of course, my favorite thing to talk about. So I always love to ski, and it's always makes your day better if you can make some turns on the mountain.
Well, I've enjoyed your weekly updates as well, and I've enjoyed my weekend time up there. I only started going up in February just because of the way the snow was.
So. I know, and look at you now. You're ripping it up, and enjoy some spring skiing, and we all are going to.
Yes, well, I have definitely found a love for it.
Yes.
I can see what all the fuss is about.
It is. You can take the worst day of your day, life, and just go up there and make turns, and all of a sudden you're smiling.
Yeah, that's true. Totally true. Yeah. All right, Jeffrey. Well, thanks for coming in. Anything else you want to mention?
Nope. Find everything at skijuno.com.
All right. Well, thanks again.
My
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon today. And many thanks to my guests. We had Enrique Bravo and Joseph Biagini here from Perseverance Theater telling us all about Serrano de Bergerac. Sounds like a great production. Alex Botello from The Canvas was here to highlight spring break classes. And he touched on the open ceramic studio where you can come in and make some bowls for the Empty Bowls project that benefits the Glory Hole. They need 250, so if everybody just goes and makes one, we could do it. We also had the Bright Girls in here, Devin Brecken and Gwen, along with their educational designer and instructor, Gabrielle Vance, telling us all about the Bright Girls Summer Academy. Applications are due by April 1st. It sounds like a great program. Lots of field trips, lots of outdoors time, science-based and free, best of all. And of course, we wrapped everything up with our weekly Eagle Crest update from Jeff Reclow, getting ready for that spring snow. Today's show, we had music from The Police. We featured Roxanne, Just a Girl by No Doubt, Higher Love from Steve Winwood, and the track I'm playing in the background right now is Everest from Ratatat. You've been listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your Wednesday host, Shelley Delaney. Tomorrow, Thursday on A Juno Afternoon, Ben Brown will host. We'll get a preview of this weekend's Symphony Showcase with Sally Schlichting. We'll meet Ted Murphy Kelly, visiting speaker for the Audubon Society. He's coming in from Whitehorse. And Nancy DeCherney will be back with Arts Up. We should have one more interview lined up before tomorrow. Jeff Brown is the producer of Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Today's show will be available on demand online at ktoo.org. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.